This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening. Of locker room wars, the possible space wars looming this century, the prolonged war in Eastern Europe that's been out of the headlines, and a battle between workers and farmers in Mexico that produces the vegetables and fruits likely to be on your summer table. That's what we have for you this hour, and a nice dose of humor as we honor the job of official town jester, a position unfilled for 700 years. They finally got somebody in Conway, Wales. We'll talk to him. We begin today in eastern Ukraine, though, where a surge in fighting has added to the rising death count on both sides. Separatists in Donetsk are attacking Ukrainian citizens. International monitors based in that city also under attack. The U.S. State Department says the Russians and their allies are playing a deadly and dishonest game.
Russia and the separatists it supports cannot simultaneously talk peace and then fight. If they want peace, they must implement the full ceasefire that they agreed to in Minsk.
But those Minsk talks seem to be fading as time passes. The fighting continues, and a year has passed since the downing of a Malaysian civilian jetliner over Ukraine. Dutch investigators now say they are closer to linking that atrocity to a separatist missile launcher, but so far just silence from Moscow. What do things look and feel like from Kiev, the Ukrainian capital? Michael Bochurkiu is the spokesperson for the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE's monitoring mission in Ukraine, where those monitors are under attack. He joins us from Kiev.
What we've been seeing over the past few days is both sides kind of digging in, fortifying their positions. In the past 24 to 48 hours, there was a bit of a spike in the fighting, especially in and around Donetsk Airport, which is a traditional hotspot in this conflict, but also, more crucially, in the areas between Donetsk and Mariupol, quite an uptick in fighting there as well. And of course, this is all happening at a time when the toll, as you might imagine, on the civilian population is really becoming dire. Our colleagues in the UN system are now counting the death toll to close to 7,000, injuries close to 17,000, and the number of people that have been uprooted is well over 2 million. And that number, by the way, includes 1.3 million internally displaced people, which puts Ukraine in the top 10 number of countries in the world with the highest displaced populations.
And suddenly, Ukraine begins to look like the Balkans in the 1980s and 90s.
Well, what's happening is, you know, this in Kiev itself, in the capital where we are, it is relatively calm. Life goes on. And the conflict zone is quite far away. But what must be remembered, of course, is that it does have a knock-on effect to the economy. It's a very, very costly conflict to the government of Ukraine in terms of money, in terms of death toll. And also, you know, what I was talking about, these internally displaced people are scattered throughout Ukraine. And many of them are living in very difficult conditions with relatives. Many are being supported by non-governmental organizations with scarce resources. So the knock-on effect is very, very difficult. And I think there's a kind of sense of collective depression, if you will, because this is turning into what we've been calling a frozen conflict that seems to have no end.
What is the mission of the monitors there? It must be frustrating to monitor a situation that whatever reports you deliver don't necessarily produce any impact on the ground, either in the part of the international community or clout against Russia.
Well, the reports, daily reports, which everyone sees, is only one of the kind of products or the results of the mission. Our mandate here is to monitor and report on the general security situation. But the other aspect of it is to facilitate dialogue and access. And I can tell you that even today and yesterday and many days before, we have been successful in negotiating mini ceasefires in towns and villages along the contact line. And what these do is the fighting stops, and it allows repair crews to come in and restore these huge water pipelines, restore electricity. They allow for humanitarian aid to come in. So it's very, very crucial, that work that we're doing right now, well ahead of the winter. There is absolutely mounting concern that it's going to be a very, very tough winter, a long winter. And we know this from monitoring. We report on it almost daily, is that the civilian infrastructure has been very, very badly hit. Roads, bridges, water pipes, as I mentioned, gas pipelines. So one almost doesn't want to think what the winter will be like for these civilians. But we're doing everything we can at the moment to help alleviate the pain and suffering on that civilian population.
The U.S. State Department evokes Minsk as a target framework for trying to at least get to a point where we can begin to talk about settlement. It's also been the case that from the very beginning, the suspicion was that Vladimir Putin wanted a profoundly weakened Ukrainian state that the West and NATO could not even afford to absorb in any sense, and a destabilized eastern border where there was chaos that supported Russian attempts to control the situation in that part of Eastern Europe. Putin seems to have succeeded with that, and Minsk fades ever more into the background. What's your assessment?
Well, Minsk is, you know, our chief monitor ambassador, Apakan, has said it, put it this way. It's really the only real roadmap on the table right now for the two sides to achieve a long-lasting, durable, sustainable peace. Work is continuing, admittedly at a frustrating pace, but the special monitoring mission to Ukraine chairs the Minsk Working Group on Security. So every 2 weeks or so, we do travel there, meet with the sides, and, you know, those nitty-gritty details are worked out. You know, it's hard to believe that it's been well over a year that this conflict has been simmering, and as time goes by, those the death toll, the injury toll, the damage to civilian infrastructure gets ever so worse. And if I could add quickly, the other thing we've been reporting on is the massive amount of unexploded ordnance mines in villages like Shirokin and near Mariupol. It's going to take a huge effort to clear those villages and make them safe again for habitation.
If that isn't even something that we'll be dealing with for decades. Michael Butchurkiu, I admire your patience and determination. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Michael Butchurkiu is with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. He's the spokesperson for their special monitoring mission in Ukraine. He spoke to us from Kiev.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.